found him just lying there and couldn't feel a pulse. I don't know anybody who had that much hate in their heart to commit a crime like that.
They determined that it was a murder.
Somebody in 1 minute takes his life. You've stolen my child.
We had this piece of a costume. We didn't know what it was.
We're looking for a subject that was dressed as a penguin, someone dressed as the Joker from Batman, someone wearing just a yellow-colored sweatshirt with a hood.
Where's your costume then?
My costume? My costume we threw away because it was full of blood.
I was terrified.
You think there are other people who were covering up their own involvement?
I do.
Evil exists. Evil dwells in people.
It's the one time when everyone pretends to be someone else. When being two-faced is part of the deal. There's a feeling that maybe the rules don't apply, and that during those moonlit hours, we all have license to eat, drink, and be scary. Halloween has morphed from our national salute to sugar into a coast-to-coast alcohol-fueled party. And nowhere is that more true than in the Rough Riders state of North Dakota. But in October of 2007, several lives would collide under that Halloween moon, and at least one person may have used a costume to try to hide his true identity, a murderer. That weekend before Halloween here in Grand Forks, Heather Eastling and her boyfriend Joel Loveline were putting on costumes, getting ready to go out.
It was a nice night. Nice night with friends.
He dressed up as a hockey fan, wearing his favorite green jersey.
I dressed in a mechanic's outfit. A friend of mine texted me and said, meet us at the Broken Drum.
The Broken Drum, half casino, half bar. Heather and Joel had a lot to celebrate. She had just moved here from Texas after dating long distance. It was nearly love at first sight.
How long did you go out with Joel before you realized this is the guy?
A week.
That's it?
Yeah. He was taken back when I told him. I said, I'm going to marry you. That's what's going to happen here. And he wasn't really ready for me to say something like that to him, but I was ready to say something like that. That's how sure I was.
But Joel, the divorced guy who loved golf, fishing, and his friends, would soon be ready for marriage too. Just 10 months after they met, this smart hospital computer IT tech proposed to this 31-year-old elementary school teacher.
He proposed on a dance floor in front of about 200 Texas dance hall two-steppers.
They were to be married the following year. But that evening, inside the Broken Drum, they were completely unprepared for the most frightening night of their lives. It all started when a bus packed with partygoers arrived at the bar. Heather watched as they started piling into the Broken Drum. The partiers were mostly well-oiled 20-somethings on an all-night pub crawl, and they'd been fueled by an estimated 325 Jell-O shots that were on board that bus. Heather and Joel were suddenly in the midst of people in Halloween costumes. As this security video shows, there was a clown with a bright rainbow-colored head of hair. There was also a cowboy, a hunter, a lion, a gangster, and a woman who went as Paris Hilton. Joel, in his green hockey jersey, was enjoying a rare cigar and playing blackjack next to a man dressed as the Penguin.
How was the night going?
It was fine. At one point, he had to take a call, but it was too loud inside, so he had gone outside to take the call.
While Joel was outside on the phone, that party bus was getting ready to go on to the next bar. But suddenly, someone from that bus needed help.
Joel had come back in the front door and said, somebody got left by the bus. I'm going to go check on him. He kissed me and went outside.
Within a few minutes, someone else would come running into the Broken Drum, yelling to call 911.
911 emergency.
We got an emergency at the Broken Drum.
The 911 call wasn't for the person Joel went to help. It was for Joel.
Went through the back door and around the cars and found him on the ground. Joel was laying there with blood all over the cement near his head.
Could you tell what had happened to him?
No. No.
Heather says that when she got outside, she didn't see the party bus or any of the people in costumes. But Joel, the good Samaritan who'd gone to help a stranger, had himself been the victim of a savage beating.
I remember hearing the ambulances coming and the cops coming, their sirens.
Joel Loveline was rushed to an ER in the same hospital where he worked as a computer tech.
Then the doctors came in and told me they did everything they could, but that Joel was gone.
800 miles away in Montana, Joel's mom and stepfather received the most terrible news parents can hear.
You raise your children and the things you do to protect them. And somebody in 1 minute takes his life, like you've stolen my child.
Joel, just 38, left behind not only his family and fiance, but also a daughter, Alexa, from his first marriage.
When you hear there's an accident, you know, you think that it's something that can be fixed, you know. So I went to the hospital thinking, you know, he's hurt, not dead.
Later, Joel's stepdad learned more about the horrible details.
The Grand Forks Police Department called us. They determined that it was a murder.
Who'd want to hurt him?
I don't know. I don't know anybody who had that much hate in their heart to commit a crime like that.
So this was just, what, bad luck? Being in the parking lot at the wrong time?
Yeah.
Trying to help the wrong person?
Yeah. Evil exists. Evil dwells in people, and it comes out, and things like this happen.
What evil had killed Joel Loveline? For Grand Forks police, the answer lay somewhere on a long list of potential suspects. And maybe one of them had left a calling card, something found at the scene, a bloody piece of a Halloween costume. Police thought it might be the key to unmasking a killer. A roundup of possible suspects begins. The Penguin.
Could be the Penguin.
Yep, that was the thinking.
The Cowboy.
The Cowboy is very difficult to deal with.
The Clown.
The Clown was crying.
He was. That made us wonder, why is this guy crying?
Police are just getting started. A night of Halloween drinking in Grand Forks, North Dakota, had somehow ended with Joel Loveline's death. Police were trying to figure out who'd used their fists to beat Joel outside the Broken Drum Bar in a fight that apparently no one witnessed. And Joel's fiance, Heather, was trying just as hard to understand what had happened to the man she loved.
Inconceivable that he picked a fight with somebody else.
Oh, of course. Totally inconceivable. He's not a fighter.
What would he do if somebody wanted to fight with him?
He would back away and use logic. He didn't feed into anger like some men would.
Joel was so badly beaten that the coroner could feel and hear the broken bones in his face when she touched it. The cause of death? Joel choked on his own blood. It was now up to police to find the killer or killers of Joel Loveline in Grand Forks, a city that averages about one murder a year. The chief of police was John Packett.
This was probably one of the more challenging cases that we've ever had because of alcohol involved, large crowds, people in costume.
The night of Joel's murder, police interviewed about 80 people still left at the Broken Drum. And here's what they heard. The party bus went downtown after it left the Broken Drum. And police heard descriptions of some costumed people last seen near either Joel or that bus. A clown, a cowboy, a penguin, a gangster, and a construction worker. And while searching for people in costumes sounds almost comical, it actually helped police identify some persons of interest, if the cops could locate them before they took off those costumes.
So if you're going to find the Penguin and the Joker and the rest of them, you got to find them pretty quick.
Got to find them pretty quick.
There was also an interesting piece of evidence left behind at the murder scene. Police thought it was a bird's foot from someone's costume, and it had blood on it. Grand Forks Police Sergeant Bill Mackey.
Could be the Penguin.
Yeah, you know, at that point we didn't know how the foot played into it or not.
Police swarmed downtown Grand Forks, and at another bar, they found one of the costumed characters they were looking for.
That same night, we found the clown.
And the clown was crying.
Yes, he was.
What was he crying about?
Well, you know, initially that's something that made us wonder, why is this guy crying?
The tears of a clown. It made police suspicious. One officer reported the clown's hands were shaking from the cold or from something else.
October 28th, 2007.
By the time the clown was brought to the police station, he had dried his tears. But he was not cooperative.
That's the big deal.
The clown told police he had nothing to do with any murder and was crying because of a domestic argument.
That night he explained to us that, you know, he'd had a bad argument with his girlfriend. That's not real clear and convincing to us.
Police say the clown then asked for a lawyer.
You just accused me?
No.
I want an attorney now.
But police just let him go.
You get the clown who's crying, who is belligerent, and who asks for a lawyer. And one of the things that could say to me is, maybe I saw something terrible happen, like I saw somebody get beaten nearly to death. But that didn't strike any of your investigators as anything other than, well, this guy's upset and he's probably drunk.
Yep, it's a challenge. One has to determine whether those tears are of remorse, whether they're tears of fear, or maybe they had onions for lunch.
That same night, police also found the cowboy. But the cowboy gave police a fake name, a fake birth date, and became physically aggressive. Police placed him in handcuffs even though he wasn't arrested.
And what does the cowboy say?
The cowboy is very difficult to deal with. He wants really nothing to do with us, doesn't want to cooperate with us.
There is no record of his interview, but an investigator says the cowboy asked a very interesting question. If the victim was wearing a green shirt with the initials UND on it.
Who was wearing a University of North Dakota sweatshirt that night?
Joel Loveling, the victim.
Suggesting that the cowboy witnessed that fight, right?
On face value, it would appear like that, yes.
Police also let the cowboy go, but soon after, they got the break they needed. The owner of that bird's foot would come forward. Police believed it would lead them straight to the murderer.
I had a yellow hooded sweatshirt on. I had some paws.
Where's your costume then?
My costume, we threw it away.
Why did you throw it away?
Because it was full of blood.
Those first hours and days after the murder of Joel Loveling, Grand Forks police had been rounding up the unusual suspects.
We're looking for a subject that was dressed as a penguin, someone dressed as the Joker from Batman, someone wearing just a yellow-colored sweatshirt with a hood.
Those investigators, including veteran Detective Mike Scholes, were scratching their heads over what appeared to be a bloody claw from a bird costume that was found near Joel Loveling's body.
So you're looking for somebody in, what, 90% of a bird costume?
We didn't know what it was. All we knew is that we had this piece of a costume.
Detectives invited the guys on the party bus who'd been so difficult the night of the murder to come back to police headquarters the following day. They did. And this time sang a different tune, one that seemed to get them all off the hook. They told cops they didn't see Joel Loveling's murder, but told of a fight outside the Broken Drum earlier that evening between one of their pals dressed as a hunter and a guy in an odd costume with a yellow sweatshirt who had also been on the bus. Because of that fight, they told the guy in the yellow outfit he couldn't get back on the bus. And then they drove downtown to another bar. The now sober and cooperative cowboy told detectives that he last saw Joel Loveline alive and well.
The guy in the UNT sweatshirt was talking to the guy in the yellow sweatshirt.
The unhappy harlequin explained that his clown tears were all about a flashback triggered when he learned about Joel Loveline's death.
I got jumped not too long ago, and I just thought of it, and I'm like, well, that could have been me, you know?
Meanwhile, across town, the guy who'd been wearing that yellow costume was just waking up. His name was Travis Stay, a 23-year-old nursing student at the University of North Dakota. And today, he was nursing the mother of all hangovers because he'd had so much to drink on the bus and in the bars the previous night that he slept away most of the next day. When he awoke, one of his friends shared some worrisome news.
One of my roommates had seen that they were looking for a guy in a yellow sweatshirt, so I went down to the police station.
Bring your attorney with you?
No. I had nothing to hide.
So 2 days after Joel Loveline's death, Travis sat down across from Grand Forks detectives.
I've seen on the internet that you guys were interested in speaking to a man with a yellow hooded sweatshirt.
When the nursing student described his lion costume, Detective Scholl's antenna went up. He suddenly realized it wasn't a bloody bird's foot next to Joel's body, but a lion's paw. And Travis then confirmed it.
I had a yellow hooded sweatshirt on. I had some paws.
The cops became even more suspicious when they noticed the injuries to Travis's face and asked how he got them. Travis explained he'd been punched out by the hunter in the parking lot of the Broken Drum.
Place your hands.
Detective Scholl's noticed some scrapes on Travis's hands.
And what's the cuts here from?
Where's your costume that now?
My costume? My costume we threw away.
Why did you throw it away?
Because it was full of blood.
When I was looking at him, I saw what appeared to be a blood drop on his shoe.
Scholl's pounced on that new lead.
Travis, would we be able to take your shoes?
Take them?
Yeah.
Travis gave the cops everything they asked for, including a DNA sample and permission to search his apartment, where his lion costume was still in the trash.
I gave them everything.
Without them needing to get a search warrant.
Because I just knew I didn't have anything to do with it.
But investigators were suspicious, in part because Travis said he couldn't remember anything from the time he was punched until the time he got into a cab more than an hour later. And on the cops' timeline, that was the time when Joel Loveline was killed.
Once he said he was going to go check on you, that was the last anybody seen him. He was found dead in the parking lot.
You guys think this is me?
We don't know.
We don't know.
But we want to eliminate you. That's why we appreciate you coming in.
What kind of murderer not only keeps the bloody clothing that they were wearing during the murder, but actually wears some of it into the police interview?
One that's probably not too smart. And there's plenty of them.
The cops let Travis go home, but they weren't buying his story. He was now a definite person of interest. And 2 days later, they had more questions for him. This time around, the questions were more pointed about just what happened while Travis was in his blackout.
Where were you? It's very important that we try to remember this, Travis.
I do not remember talking to that man.
I can almost guarantee you that the cops are thinking to themselves, come on.
Right.
You don't remember? Really?
Yeah, I think that they probably thought I was conveniently drunk.
Well, it is convenient. And then you walk out of the police station.
Yep.
And you think what? That's the end of it?
I knew things at that point had, you know, taken a swing in the wrong direction, and you know, we were gonna look into getting an attorney.
Travis Stay was about to find out he'd need a lawyer sooner than he thought.
There was a knock on the door and they said that there was bad news.
Police make an arrest, and the case moves into court. two distraught families on two sides of a murder case.
He was just lying there. I was screaming his name at him.
In the month after her fiancé's murder, Heather Eastling's pain was beyond words.
Like someone just sucks the life out of you and tells you your life isn't what you wanted it to be and your dream life isn't going to happen.
Grand Forks detectives had been working around the clock to solve this rare murder case. And then, those DNA tests of Travis's lion costume came back. Some of that blood on Travis was his own, but some of it belonged to Joel Loveline. And with that, police had everything they needed.
And then one morning,
there was a knock on the door, and you know, there was Detective Scholes and Detective Simon, and they were arresting me for his murder.
Mr. Stable,
a nervous Travis was arraigned from jail via closed circuit TV.
State versus Travis State.
His anguish and misery is evident in his call home.
Well,
hi, Travis. It's going to be okay. It's going to be okay.
I don't know.
I know this is difficult for you, Trav.
It would get even tougher. A little more than a year after his arrest, Travis found himself on trial for murder, facing the rest of his life behind bars. Prosecutor Nancy Yon laid out the state's case.
Joel Loveline, a 38-year-old man,
for a jury that would decide Travis's fate.
Travis brutally beat Joel Loveline while he was down on the ground and did not seek help for him afterwards, left the scene, allowing Mr. Loveline to choke to death on his own blood.
Jurors heard Joel's fiance Heather as she relived that awful night.
He was just lying there. I was screaming his name at him. He didn't say anything. He didn't do anything.
He was the last person that we believe was seen with Mr. Loveline.
Grand Forks detectives felt they'd given their prosecutors an open and shut case with overwhelming physical evidence.
When we looked at Travis's clothes, it was covered in blood. And most importantly, none of the other costumes matched the paw that was left behind at the crime scene.
We tested four different areas of Travis Day's sweatshirt. Three out of the four samples tested positive for Joel Loveline's blood.
And prosecutors argued they could prove Travis was there with Joel Loveline prior to the murder. Their eyewitnesses? The guys who'd been so sloshed and uncooperative the night of the murder. The hunter, the gangster, and the cowboy from the party bus. Bryce Larson, the cowboy, took the stand and told a story both his friends would echo.
Mr. Larson, did you ever witness the murder of Joel Loveline?
No.
Did you ever see him assaulted in the Broken Drum parking lot?
No.
When you left that parking lot, where was he?
Talking to the guy in the yellow.
And that guy who'd been wearing the cheesy yellow lion costume? He was sitting right there at the defense table. Prosecutors laid out their timeline using security video from the Broken Drum. There's Travis in his lion costume, which by this point in the evening is little more than a yellow hoodie. Moments later, he's gone outside. Joel Loveline, wearing his green hockey jersey, can be seen heading out a little later, never to return. The tape, prosecutors said, proved Travis was in the parking lot when Joel was killed. And according to the state's witnesses from the bus, it was impossible for any of the other partygoers to have attacked Joel because their party bus was gone by the time of the murder.
The bus was not at the Broken Drum when Joel Loveline was murdered.
That is the line. Negative.
The state used Travis's own words against him. They played every frame of those police interviews in which Travis claimed not to remember the most critical part of that alcohol-sodden night.
You don't remember between the time you got hit until the time you got into the cab.
Jurors heard testimony that later that night, Travis was in another fight.
After Mr. Loveline was killed, Travis Day left the Broken Drum on foot, walked to a location in the alleyway where he confronted another individual.
Travis threw a punch at that man and missed. He then got into a cab and went home. If prosecutors were to be believed, the defendant was a Halloween nightmare come to life. Just add alcohol, and Nurse Travis turns into a drunk and dangerous Mr. Hyde.
Joel was bleeding from his face.
That theory helped them explain to jurors how the slightly built Travis was able to take down and kill the much larger Joel with his bare hands. Police also say the fact that Joel had had a few drinks made it easier for Travis.
He was drunk. And so the fact that a little guy comes at him unsuspecting and he's unstable on his feet because he's intoxicated too makes perfect sense that he could drop him.
Aspiration.
8 days into the trial, the prosecution called its final witness, a blood spatter analyst.
This is a possible physician.
Who used photos to demonstrate that Joel's blood on Travis's clothing was consistent with Travis standing over Joel while beating him.
Travis was either standing right next to Joel Loveline or straddling Joel Loveline as he was punching him in his face.
The prosecution's evidence was stacking up against Travis Stay. No question he'd been in a fight with the hunter before Joel was killed. No question he'd taken a swing at someone else afterwards. And now he'd have to explain why there were traces of Joel's blood on his costume, which Travis was either unable or unwilling to do because of his suspiciously convenient amnesia.
Mob mentality are a recipe for tragedy.
Could someone else be behind this? The defense has its own list of suspects.
You think there are other people who are covering up their own involvement in this?
I do.
All the evidence will show.
Travis Stay's defense team faced a difficult task. Prosecutors had portrayed their client as a two-faced killer who changed personalities after he had a few drinks in him and who, in a blind rage, had mercilessly beaten Joel Loveline to death.
Travis Stay is not guilty.
In the defense's opening statement, attorney Peter Wold told jurors this was simply impossible.
The beaten, drunken, small, stumbling Travis Stay was not capable of inflicting the multiple brutal injuries.
Wold, along with Joe Friedberg, defended Travis. Their argument to the jury, Travis Stay was too slight, too drunk, and too decent to have killed Joel Loveline, a man who was trying to help Travis. Joel, they argued, was killed by the same Halloween costume partygoers he was trying to protect Travis from.
Yeah, but that wasn't.
First, Travis's legal team had to address the image prosecutors had crafted. Was he, in fact, a cold-blooded killer prone to alcoholic rages?
The prosecution's theory, which was also the police theory, was that Travis became a different person when he was drinking.
They made that up out of whole air. If they had a witness that said that was Travis's history, if they could provide anecdotal evidence that it happened twice before, 100 times before, once before. We never saw it. We never heard of it.
So we know.
He's sitting unprotected in front of cops for hours, answering questions without any help, without any pause, without any break, and willingly bearing his soul to him.
Where were you? It's very important that we try to remember this, Travis.
I do not remember talking to that man. Do I think this is me?
We don't know.
He was credible. He leaned across during the second interview and said, "You think it was me?"
We have to be, as honest as we can about it.
Next, the defense tried to convince jurors just how improbable it was that the 5'7" Travis could have hurt the 6'3" Joel at all, let alone when he was knee-walking drunk.
When we read the autopsy, and it gave the inches and pounds of the deceased,
said he outweighed him by 75 to 80 pounds, was 7 or 8 inches bigger. Then it began to take on kind of a different color.
And so the defense offered some suspects of its own. The first people rounded up the night of the murder. That posse of costumed guys on the bus.
Mob mentality are a recipe for tragedy.
You think there are other people who were covering up their own involvement in this?
I do.
What do you think happened that night?
I think that the cowboy, the gangster, and the construction worker came back outside and confronted Joel and I. They didn't get back on the bus and leave us standing in the parking lot. I think that, they beat us both up.
Travis Day was not.
The defense team tried to prove that. They conducted a withering cross-examination of the man who was wearing the cowboy costume that night. The cowboy admitted he had lied to police the night of the murder about not witnessing the fight between Travis and the man in the hunter's costume. The defense wanted to know what else he might be lying about.
What is it that we can look for that will help us determine when you're telling the truth?
I don't know.
Well, if you don't know, who does?
I don't know.
The lawyer's strategy was to hammer away at the partygoers' shifting stories.
Are you sure?
Under cross-examination, that crying clown, who cops found weeping and said things had gotten out of hand that night, now said on the stand he didn't remember crying or being upset.
Were you shaken up? Do you remember that?
I don't remember that.
Could I look at your shoes as well?
Yeah.
And as for that blood Detective Scholes noticed on Travis's shoes during his initial interrogation, DNA tests proved it was Travis's, not Joel's.
I guess one possible source would
the
be...
The defense introduced testimony suggesting Travis might have gotten Joel's blood on himself when he was trying to help Joel, not hurt him.
As appears somewhat evident in the photos.
An ER doctor who examined Travis took the stand and concluded Travis's hands would have been far more battered and scuffed if he'd used them to beat Joel.
Do you find the injuries to Mr. Stay's hands consistent or inconsistent with having delivered the blows that did that damage?
That'd be inconsistent.
Prosecutors had argued that the party bus, along with all those theoretical suspects on it, was long gone at the time of Joel's murder. But the defense countered that the broken drum security tape proved just the opposite. On that same tape was something important that they claim police and prosecutors discounted: the clown. Everyone agrees the clown was on the bus when it left. But here he is still in the bar after Joel leaves. Which means, as long as the clown was in the bar, the bus was still in the parking lot.
You can see Joel leave the bar.
Absolutely.
And you can see the clown leave the bar.
No doubt.
3.5 minutes later.
Right.
Plenty of time for any of the people in that crowd to have confronted and attacked Joel.
And we know the cowboy, the gangster, the construction worker had already gone out. And the bus was still there.
The bailiff.
In court, the lead detective was forced to concede the police timeline was flawed.
We know that they have 3.5 minutes to do that, have this face off, and be back on the bus, right?
Right.
3.5 minutes. Plenty of time for plenty of people other than Travis Stay to murder Joel. Travis never took the stand, leaving open the question of what the jury would make of his amnesia during the most important hour in his young life.
You had lost your memory before.
Right.
Because of alcohol.
Right.
Every time you went out and got drunk?
Not every time, but it was, I didn't drink all that often, but when I did go out, I drank hard.
Anybody ever tell you that your personality changed when you were drunk?
No. My friends usually describe me as more of a happy-go-lucky.
Happy-go-lucky or a heartless murderer? 7 men and 5 women would soon decide.
Joel's blood was found on one person.
Both sides convinced of their cases.
You feeling confident?
Absolutely.
jurors would have a surprise for one of them. Travis Stay was looking at a real-life Halloween nightmare. More than 60 years in jail if he was convicted of murdering Joel Loveleen. After a 9-day trial, jurors began deliberating.
You feeling confident?
Absolutely.
Really, even though you're looking at what basically is life in a North Dakota prison,
yep,
if you're convicted.
I mean, I'm nervous, but, you know, I was confident.
Joel's fiancée, Heather, was also confident of a guilty verdict.
It just seemed like, okay, we have the right guy, and yeah, done.
The jurors we spoke with said prosecutors presented their case as if it were open and shut.
I would not say their style was cocky at all. They were confident, and they felt that they had enough evidence.
The jurors began examining the evidence and the testimony. One key issue was the prosecution's timeline, in which the bus had gone by the time Joel was killed.
The bus was there at the time, had to have been. The bus was there longer than the prosecution was saying.
Jurors were also troubled by the clown. Remember, he was found crying soon after Joel was murdered.
And that just struck me as completely odd, out of character for a young guy on a Halloween night.
They were also concerned by what the clown told police that evening.
It was pretty important that he would actually say things got out of hand over there.
And they questioned why only Travis Stay's lion costume was tested for blood.
Why didn't they examine any of the people's clothes that were on the bus? You know, why didn't they check anyone else, anything else besides this lion?
It took the jury only about 5 hours to reach a verdict.
We, the jury, do find the defendant, Travis Robert Stay, not guilty of the crime.
My attorney said a quick verdict is a good verdict in this case, and he was right. It was a vindication.
Any reaction to the verdict? Were you surprised?
And then the verdict comes in.
Re-devastated.
Not guilty.
Yeah. I didn't understand that. I still don't understand that. I don't know everything, but I do know that Joel's blood was found on one person.
Detective Mike Scholes.
You don't think justice was done here?
The fact that he's acquitted by jury doesn't mean he's acquitted by me. The case is strong. The physical evidence is strong. There's not one stitch of physical evidence to suggest anybody else was involved other than speculation.
Grand Forks police consider this case closed. And in an unusual move, some of the evidence was destroyed. Dateline contacted the cowboy, the gangster, and the construction worker who were all on that bus. All declined our requests for on-camera interviews, but told us on the phone that, as they've maintained from day one, they had absolutely nothing to do with Joel Loveleen's murder, and they feel they've been unfairly accused by the defense.
People talk. And when you're accused of something like this, I'm sure it has a negative impact on your reputation.
Since the trial, even Joel's parents have been divided over Travis's guilt. Joel's mom believes he is most likely guilty. But Joel's stepdad thinks Travis didn't do it.
Travis was so drunk he couldn't hit the ground with his hat. So how is he going to beat up a 240-pound fellow that's 6'3" or 6'4" when he can hardly stand up himself?
You think there are people out there who know more than they're saying?
Yes.
People other than Travis?
Yes. Somebody knows something.
Joel's daughter, Alexa, now married, is left with just memories of her dad, who would take her outside to taste the snowflakes.
He was kind of like my best friend.
When you remember him, what do you think about
him? Him laughing. He liked to make other people laugh.
Travis Stay never became a nurse. After going through the legal system himself, he decided to enroll in law school. He's since graduated and is now working as a full-time attorney with the Public Defender's Office. And he wants to publicly apologize to Joel Loveleen's family.
I'm sorry for being a part of the equation that night. You know, I drank too much, and it was irresponsible, it was reckless, it was short-sighted and regrettable. But, you know, I didn't kill Joel. He was my only friend in the parking lot that night.
The idea behind this night at the end of October is that all that fear, danger, and horror are supposed to be imaginary, manufactured for the child living in every one of us. But of course, there is genuine evil out there, no matter what the calendar says. And sadly, sometimes the horror of Halloween is the real thing.